Did the sprint race ruin your weekend? Do the Dallas Cowboys count as grid girls? And has Fernando Alonso's curse finally used its power on Aston Martin?
I would like to apologize to our non-American American viewers for Dominic forgetting the word cheerleaders when talking about the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders, not the whole team.
Welcome to Tinfoil Helmets, your occasional spicy hot take roundup of the latest F1 rumors, all with the almost believable conspiracy theories to back them up. Everything here is carefully researched for hours to make sure it is totally founded in logic, reason, and truth. Or not. Who knows? Let's start off with our regular section of Have We Got Anything Right? Hi, Dominic here with a quick pre-episode note for listeners. This episode was recorded prior to the post-race disqualifications of Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc due to their teams trying to see who can screw up their driver's race the most.
Well, we certainly didn't get that intro right after three or four times of trying it.
Nobody will know because I have cut it appropriately and it will sound perfect.
Fantastic. Well, Lewis did drive the wheels off the car as revenge for being a dumbass.
He did!
That's a point for you.
Indeed, and he also admitted being a dumbass in the podium, post-race interview, immediately getting the microphone. So credit for owning that. His teammate could learn something from that. Just saying.
Ricardo win the points. That would be a no.
No. We shall talk more about that later, I feel. Perez underperforms. I don't think he did underperform apart from qualifying badly.
I think the real question there is, what is Perez underperforming? Because we can say that Perez, based on recent Perez, I would say he did not underperform like he has been. However, he is still nowhere near where that car needs to be, given where Max is consistently putting it.
He is definitely not meeting expectations.
Ooh.
Max wins, but after trying really hard in his most impressive drive of the season, I'm going to give myself half a point for that. Pat on the back, tap, tap, tap. I think he did. Against Piastri. No, definitely not for that. And then Norris, after Piastri has driven too hard. No.
I'm going to give you more than, like, at least a 50. I'll give you, like, a 75 out of that, on that one, just because, like, Piastri did kind of overdrive at the start, which led to him and Ocon coming together. So he did overdrive. Probably Max, one of Max's more impressive wins of the season. Yeah, he's come from far back on the grid during this season, but it's always been like, and Max catches the lead and goes away. This one, he was kind of under pressure the entire race, so I definitely think it was his most impressive win of the season.
My ability to read the tea leaves here was shockingly good. It's amazing what a random number generator does.
What about three different teams on the podium? We got that one right.
Yes, good job. That was yours. That's excellent. We got it twice. We didn't just get three teams in one of the races. We got three teams in both races. Was it a different three?
No.
Okay, well.
Right, because it was Max, Lewis, and Lando both times? The sprint was so boring, I can't even remember the podium of the sprint.
We will take a pause here, and we will check the results. Oh no, it was Ferrari.
It was Ferrari. Charles.
It
who
was
saw
Ferrari.
See, we just couldn't imagine Charles being on the podium with Ferrari as strategy captain, and yeah.
But it was a sprint race. You didn't need any strategy from Ferrari for that.
That's true. There are no pit stops in a sprint race. Although Ferrari might try it.
Give them a chance. They try anything once. Or twice.
You don't have to run two tire competitions. You could go soft.
Indeed. Exactly.
Turn one, lap one, chaos. It was exciting, but I wouldn't quite call it chaos.
No, it was very good. I was surprised that nobody bent anything massively. It took them at least another half a lap to pull that off. So
yeah.
Good work.
So I think for today, we should really combine our between race drama with does so-and-so still have a job? Because a lot of the between race drama was surrounding potential seat moves for 2024.
And people who probably shouldn't have a job, but not because of their race performance.
Right. So should we start with Lance Stroll?
Yes. Lance got called to the mat by the FIA for his shenanigans, which are unclear exactly what shenanigans this was really about, at the Qatar race.
I think it was the pushing of personnel.
I think it was too, but it wasn't confirmed whether there was more to it than that, that there was more than just the trainer push that we saw on camera. And I thought that was a bit... It was interesting that the FIA took the relatively speaking, extraordinary measure to go talk about that. I thought that was very odd, which I think says a lot about what he may or may not have done. So that's not good.
I think it also says a lot about, like, I don't know, bullying and mental health, also to a point of where people are trying to take more notice of these sorts of things.
Yeah, and to be brutally honest, it was absolutely uncalled for him to get out of the car and shove anybody. I think it's a bit suspicious when a driver gets out and throws their gloves on the floor in anger. I mean,
I'll get that. You know, there's a lot of emotion involved in racing and trying to put a lap together. There's frustration. So I can understand throwing your gloves, but, like, don't shove somebody who's clearly on your side trying to help you out.
Exactly. It was not their fault.
Take that down a garage and shove a Ferrari strategist.
Exactly. Who would do that? Nobody would ever do that.
And speaking of Lance, I saw some rumors on the interwebs that...
You did?
That he might retire at the end of the year.
Do we think it's a retirement, or do we think it's just exiting F1?
I think it's exiting F1. I think there's a YouTuber, Josh Revel, who I like, who posted something that sounded straight out of our own podcast on his YouTube channel of... essentially, Lance should move to WEC and do the Aston Martin Valkyrie program. I think that would be a great fit for him. It does make a lot of sense. Lance has done some endurance racing in the past with actually good success. And, you know, there's also a good example of F1 drivers who couldn't quite cut it in F1 being great WEC drivers. Brendan Hartley comes to mind.
Especially, I think, in many cases, not only are those F1 drivers pretty good in WEC, they're actually better than other F1 drivers who then go on to WEC. Like, the successful F1 drivers tend not to make great, with the exception of Fernando Alonso.
Yeah, there's something really interesting there of, like, not only do you have to be, like, a good driver, you have to find, like, the series that matches your driving style.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
It's really interesting.
I would like to put a plug at this point. If there are any F1 drivers that listen to this podcast and would like some career advice, please contact us at feedback@turnfallhelmets. Our services are free.
Yeah, and they're worth every penny you will pay for them.
Exactly.
Then there's more retirement rumors, this time surrounding Sergio Perez. There was the rumor, essentially, that if he does not hold on to second place in the championship, he will be let go for 2024, being replaced by Ricardo.
There was also a competing rumor that he himself was going to retire after some sponsors apparently had let the message out. That he had already agreed to the retirement and there would be a retirement party at the Mexico Grand Prix.
Potentially for people to, I guess this could be, somebody could get a job instead of no longer have a job, is they've upped the fines to the max of $1
million. I find this actually very, not surprising is not the right word. It seems like a good idea on the surface, but because there was no criteria specified to go with it about what determines a $1 million fine versus the previous limit of $250 or a $50,000 fine for touching somebody's rear wing, that sounds rude. It's very strange because I think that's the bit that's missing from this. It just sounds ridiculous. It seems arbitrary that they're like, we'd like a vacation in Hawaii for all of the stewards. Ch-ch-ch-ch. Oh, you looked funny. Here's a fine for $1 million.
I assume this is like for racing or technical infringements, because I believe McLaren was fined around $1 million in like the Spygate scandal.
Yeah, this is specifically for driver fines.
Ooh.
So that's why all the drivers were upset about it, because the way it came out and the way it was announced was basically on the back of Lewis's $50,000 fine, $25,000 suspended for his crossing the track in the wrong way at Qatar, and this came out week after that, making the statement that these fines could go up to $1 million. And then you had George complaining loudly, saying, when I started in Williams in F1, I was only on a five-figure salary, and I went into six-figure debt just to pay for my flights and my trainer and my beautiful good looks and my clothes and my PR person and all the other stuff that had to go with it. And he said that I couldn't afford $1 million fine. And I think that's partly my point that I kind of agree with, which is like, you should probably stipulate the criteria because it seems a bit weird.
Yeah. Do the drivers actually pay the fines, or sometimes do the teams take care of the fines?
So my understanding, having this came out after Max's one, is the driver has to actually pay for it. Now, that doesn't mean that your team won't reimburse you, but the actual, effectively, the transaction has to come from their personal funds.
Your name has to be on the check.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I know. I think you could do something similar to almost how like super licenses, how much they cost is like based on how many points you scored in the previous season. So like based on how many points you or how much your super license costs could also determine like your level of fines.
Yes, exactly. Like a ratio would be great. Next item. This is kind of a plug for another podcast. The F1 Off the Grid podcast had an interview with Andrea Stella of the McLaren team principal. This was really good. And I've occasionally banged on what is it that McLaren did that somehow made the car so much more amazing. He goes into a little bit about their approach and kind of the things that they did and the way they approached it. It's really good and it's really honest. It's also got like 15 or 20 minutes talking about he used to be Michael Schumacher's race engineer and talked about some of the experiences working with Michael on that. It's if you're an F1 fan, totally worth a good listen to.
Was I right?
As in?
Because I had the theory that they weren't listening to people on the ground or the engineers and stuff, and it was somebody was what my way or the highway, and that was the person who was fired.
It's unclear if that's what the cause of the problems were, but definitely the way he talks about it is he doesn't set goals. He doesn't set like a target that you've got to get to. He focuses on a process and making sure that everybody has the right things available to them and trying to follow that through and be the best you possibly can in your area was what he was saying. So it did feel a little bit like we're not setting a target. You have to do it this way. It was like, let's just follow the process. Let's do what we need to do.
So are you suggesting that not setting arbitrary deadlines or timelines based on no reason whatsoever is not the best way to do a successful business, especially in a competitive environment? Interesting. There might be some project managers who should forward this podcast along to.
Yes, I am completely saying that, and I will happily go to bat with anybody who'd like to talk to me about that. That's on my alternative podcast on how to do software engineering for people who have no idea what they're doing.
I'll be sure to listen to that. So Lewis, it turns out, thinks that drivers are wusses for complaining about Qatar, which is very interesting from somebody who did 200 meters, 300 meters?
50 feet.
Turn one.
He did. He didn't really complete it.
No.
To do a bit of a quote, he says, he starts out this quote, and this is really good. He opens it absolutely perfectly. Obviously, I didn't do the race, so I didn't get to feel the pain that the drivers felt. That's where he should have stopped. He should have stopped immediately at that point, and it would have been great. But then he goes on to say, Malaysia was much hotter than that race, and I know what it's like to lose 4 or more kilos in a race and barely being able to stand afterwards. And then goes on to say, this is an extreme sport that we are paid very highly for what we do. I've just got to...
Well, not George, apparently.
I've just got to train harder, and that's how it's been for me. And then at the very end, he goes to, back in the Senna days, you'd go over a curb, it's grass, and you pay the penalty. It's like, let's not get too soft. I was pretty disappointed with the way this quote came out. I do wonder whether there's more context in there, but it sounded pretty bad. Especially for a person who didn't participate in the bloody race.
Yeah. I have to say, I do like his comment of, I should just train harder. I like that one of like, yep, that we should just train harder. That's the problem. That will solve what's going on here. I did like that. That being said, like, I actually think he had some good points, but also I think his comms would carry a lot more weight if he did the damn race.
Yes. Yes. If he'd got to the end of the race and like everybody else was stumbling around like a drunk person and then said those things, that would be very different. Right?
Or if he got to the end of the race and got it and hopped out of his car and was like, great race, guys. I mean, I'm just more conditioned than y'all. You guys should train harder and be like me.
Indeed. Indeed.
And then I think finally, kind of in the same realm of does Blank still have a job, Max possibly to Ferrari?
This was such an odd rumor.
Right. So this came out because apparently Max wants to buy like Michael Schumacher's 2004 Ferrari. Because apparently if you're a Red Bull racing driver who is successful, you need to also like... start collecting other Formula One cars you find interesting. And then he also made a comment along the lines of, if Helmut Marko leaves or gets fired, that he would also leave. So, which is a weird person to fall on your sword for.
It's a very strange person to fall on your sword for.
Also somebody who like might just very well decide they want to retire.
Is the real story here that actually Helmut and Max have decided that they've been so successful at Red Bull that the real answer is that they need to go to Ferrari and become, you know, the great Ferrari turnaround story that everybody seems to want to do because Michael did it and everybody's been trying to do it since then. Fernando tried it. Charles is trying it, and now apparently Max wants to give it a shot. Maybe that's his thing. Maybe once
Sebastian tried it.
Everybody wants to do it, but nobody can pull it off because they don't realize that they need to bring the entire team. At which point, you should just stay with Red Bull anyway.
Yeah, I mean, if you could bring Adrian Newey, that might help.
Oh my word! Wasn't there the rumor that Ferrari had approached Christian Horner earlier in the year when Binotto left, and he turned it down?
Yeah,
here we go.
But that's definitely like, why would I want to trade all like the autonomy and power that I have now to go work for Ferrari? Like that, like,
because it's the greatest turnaround story in F1 history if you could pull it off.
Yeah, if, or you can win championships now.
You see, this is the greatest quandary, which is the greatest win, because you've, you know, got a great team with great people that just happen to be the way it is, and finally you've nailed it. Or is it you take someone who is truly awful and you turn it around? Like, it's like going...
Well, in that case, he'd go be the team principal for Aston Martin.
Oh, there we go.
Spicy. That was a little mean.
Spicy.
Yeah,
I thought this was an interesting rumor, and I feel there's a little bit more of a hint of tangibility in it than maybe some of the other stupid rumors. There was definitely, because it was a comment in there about him talking to John Alcon about buying the car. And then there was some other comment about, like, maybe he'd go drive for Ferrari. It was interesting. Something's happening there.
I can't wait for this is a whole nothing burger of he just drives Michael Schumacher's Ferrari. look, he's driving for Ferrari.
But then when he goes to Ferrari in 2028 after having won 12 million championships, and then
I don't think that math checks
it
out.
It's possible. when he's turned the team around, it'll be how did this come about, Max, as he writes in his memoirs, his multi-episode TV series about turning around Ferrari. He'll say, it was that one time when I said I'd like to drive Michael Schumacher's Ferrari, and I got a chance to build a relationship, and from that Mighty Oaks did grow.
I think it would be very interesting, just for like one race weekend, where we swap GP and Javi, and let Max really get a Ferrari experience.
Yes, yes. A rotational program for team engineers.
Yes. A loan system. Did you see, though, there was a comment during qualifying? This is actually a good segue. Let's move on and talk about one of the qualifyings. Javi had said, there is a lap time deleted, Verstappen's lap time deleted, and Charles was like, start with the name, you gave me a heart attack.
Oh, it was so bad. That was... I didn't hear it, but having seen the commentary, I'm just like, really? Really? Could you... Yes. Words and their order is important.
Lap deleted? For Max?
You know that's how it was.
Yeah.
You know there was the pause.
you are P10? P10?
The thing that makes it so funny is it's so plausible. Man.
And then also...
How about the rest of qualifying?
I mean, Max got 6th with a deleted lap. That's fine.
Yeah. His lap, even if he'd managed to not go off the track and kept it in, which probably would have lost him a couple of milliseconds, it would not have been fast enough for pole still. So.
Well, I mean, what is more guaranteeing of a Max Verstappen win than a Charles Leclerc pole position?
Nothing. That is literally it's like... It's 100% true.
I wish there was something like Formula One reference, similar to like baseball reference or something like that, where I could actually go look at like the pole positions and see how many Charles Leclerc poles Max has actually converted to wins. Because it's really high. It's really high.
There's a thing that I've taken away from baseball and some other sports where everybody's all about the stats. Stats. And it's just like, you know, chop trumps, right? But I feel in Formula One, the best thing about some of the stats is it just illuminates the absurdity of so many messed up things that have happened in F1.
Yes.
It's just great. Because it's never like, you know, oh, 0.055 against 0.056. Look at this. It turns out Gary from South Carolina has got a better batting ratio than Bobby from Louisiana. It's like, no, it turns out nobody can drive. And it turns out that when you put this on pole, you're not very good.
Or there's a big difference between one lap pace and race pace, and Red Bull does not care about one lap pace this season.
Indeed. It was interesting that Ferrari yet again made that call, and I also think it's funny that yet again Leclerc proves that his one lap pace is great, but his racing actually isn't really anything to take home.
You want to talk about the sprint shootout? Because we had another exactly same qualifying format.
Indeed. It is a little shorter.
Oh, that's true.
It's a little shorter, and they force the tires on you. You have to do medium, medium, soft.
Yeah, it's still kind of crap.
I know. They should just do one. I hate it. I think the only takeaway I had from the basically the same qualifying was the only difference was that Red Bull really suddenly turned it around. The car was a whole lot better. I don't understand what it was from the day to day. And because they couldn't change anything because it was in Parc Fermé.
Well, there were some things you can change. You can change front wing angles and things
like that. Yeah, but like, I'd have thought that in the qualifying that they would have done, if that was a thing that was on the table that they thought that would have helped, they'd have just tried it anyway, but yeah. Apparently not. So,
I don't really want to talk that much about the sprint race.
No. I think I'm going to make one comment, which was I fell asleep and I forgot what happened. I think that says it all.
My comment will be, it's kind of more of an overarching comment of sprint races ruin the race weekend.
For the same reason that Max thinks that they ruin the weekend?
Possibly. I didn't necessarily see Max's comments. Oh.
Max said that he felt that they ruined the weekend because they just tell you what the race is going to be.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that. Although the race, I wouldn't say, was exactly like that. However, because you essentially have one practice session, we ended up with four cars starting from the pit lane. We had, 20% of the grid not on the grid. That's embarrassing for Formula One.
It is. But it's also, I hate to say it, I will let you have that claim for Haas. I'm not sure I'm willing to accept that claim for Aston Martin. I just think they're dumbasses.
Because you would have had, on a normal race weekend, you would have had three practice sessions, and they could have burned one of the practice sessions being like old car versus new after everything looked really wrong in free practice one. They could have gone to free practice two and gone, let's swap a floor real quick or something like that, or even maybe in three practice free. That's a hard thing to say quickly. But even then, you know, they could have had a chance to do these sorts of runs. Haas totally screwed their setup and said, screw it, we're just going to change our setup for the race. So you had teams who essentially, because they had no data on what to expect, and as much as, you know, not doing a lot of practice can make for interesting race sessions, because we don't have out of race weekend testing anymore, you ended up in a situation where teams were then using the Grand Prix as a test session because there was no other time this weekend where they could run the car and figure out anything they actually had to do. And I think, you know, you looked at what Alonso's pace was during the race. It was a great drive to come from the pit lane until he retired. But imagine if he started where he should have started on the grid because they had a chance to, like, set up the thing. It's not doing anything, the sprints. It's cool. It's another, like, Grand Prix-esque style thing to watch on a weekend. But, like, there is nothing that makes it inherently different from the Grand Prix other than it being one-third of the distance and Ferrari doesn't have the chance to bottle a pit stop strategy. And Merck can't show us how slow their pit stops are. That's the only difference.
No, I agree. I am no fan of the sprint race.
So when I put on the notes of sprint races ruin the race weekend... and another comment that I definitely saw on social media, and I'll just echo here, was the sprint race weekends earlier in the year were impacted because of the weather, and the weather is what made those sprint race weekends interesting. You think of the drying track at Spa, second example that was also rainy. And those were different from the race. So you had kind of a wet track race and a dry track race, and that actually made it somewhat interesting. Especially when you think of, oh, maybe we start on a wet track and then we have to actually do a pit stop in the middle of a race. So, or in a sprint race. So there was a lot going on there. And the last two weekends, so Qatar and Austin, we've had dry track sprint races and it's just been crap. And I wish they would finally just do away with them.
I agree. I'm wholly aligned.
Or bring out Bernie's sprinkler plan and the sprint race is always on wet tires.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, right?
I would subscribe to that. That'd be great. Maybe it needs to be you don't get to decide whether it's a sprint race ahead of time. What you decide is when you get into Friday, and if the weather gives a greater than 70% chance of rain on the Saturday, you completely mess it up and it becomes a sprint race weekend. So you get FP1 and FP2 on Friday because you get the practice session in, and then the schedule gets messed up within the same, you know, the FP3 session versus the qualifying session, and you can make it all work. You could do qualifying earlier in that FP3 session. Then you can do the sprint race using that grid setup in the thing in the afternoon, in the rain, where the track's all changing. And then you have the grid for Sunday. Problem solved. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. F1, talk to us. We've got the best ideas.
Yeah. Or, you know, you can even do, like, reverse grids, something like that.
Exactly,
like
exactly.
If you want to do something, but, like, just with what this is, with an almost identical qualifying format to, like, the race qualifying, and then just the race but shorter, it's just, it's crap.
I will make also one final comment, not about the format, but did you see the stands while you were watching any of the sprint shenanigans, race or qualifying? They were not busy. I'm not sure it's achieving the commercial goals it's supposed to achieve.
Well, we watched it on TV, so in that case, it might be achieving some commercial goals. However, now I don't watch qualifying because that's on a Friday and I'm doing work.
Yes, I don't watch it either. I just do some
yes,
work.
Yes, I too am doing work, fellow coworkers.
Uh-huh. Yes. Okay, should we go on to the race?
Sure.
Okay. We have a very important question. I think this is important. Do the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders,
nice job,
I've been corrected, I've yeah. got it now, do they count as grid girls considering that they have banned grid girls?
It's an interesting line though, isn't it? Because I saw them and it's like, that's awfully close to, like, it's technically not a grid girl because, like, no, they aren't holding, like, the driver signs or anything like that.
It's a performance.
It is a cultural aspect of the True. Race and its location, but it is oddly close to grid girls, isn't it?
Indeed. And we didn't get a fly past. Whereas other races, which, because remember, flypasts are banned, they're not supposed to happen, but they keep happening in these other races. I'm very curious. Because you see, we've got a rule here, no grid girls. We kind of got them. It's a bit weird. But we didn't get the flyby, but in other places where we're not allowed flybys, we could get them anyway.
So. And as the resident freedom-loving American on this podcast, if there should be any race weekend with a flyby, it should be in the US.
And it should be in Texas.
So Vegas, there is Nellis Air Force Base right outside of Las Vegas, and that is kind of like the home of the Thunderbirds, at least, and there's a lot of other big, there's like the big red flag, Air Force operation that goes on outside of the Nellis and the Nellis Test Range. So Nellis is a pretty big Air Force Base.
Yes, but that's just a proxy for Area 51, and then it's not the time to reveal aliens to society right before we start an F1 race.
Well, then I guess we just need a Janet Airlines flyover. That would be fun.
Janet Airlines?
Yeah, they're the shuttle from Las Vegas to Area 51.
This is a new... I'm going to have to research this now.
White planes, big red stripe on them. They all take off and then immediately turn off their transponders and go to secret places. Like Tapano and Area 51. Yeah.
I have some post-race homework.
Yeah,
yes, so that's the question. My conclusion is, yes, they are, in fact, grid girls. If only because the spirit of banning grid girls was to minimize / remove the objectification of the ladies doing the dancing. And I feel that is really in the spirit of that rule change. That means that they can't ask.
As someone who grew up in Houston and went to Texas A&M University, I'd be totally fine with removing the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders from the grid, as well as the University of Texas at Austin band. I think neither have a place.
Because they're the Dallas Cowboys, do they need, like, security protection from the Austin fans? Because does Austin have a team that needs to...
Austin does not have an NFL team.
Oh, I see. Okay, that would be the difference.
And the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders are definitely on, like, the cultural icon scale of the map. There was a TV show at one point in time that I had some friends that were obsessed over that was all about... It was a reality TV show all about making the squad of the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders. It is definitely, if you want to be a professional cheerleader, that is the squad you are trying to get onto.
I see.
Yes.
That is not for me. Okay.
Moving on back to Formula One.
Yes, great start. Everybody kept it clean. I was actually very surprised that everybody kept it clean. I thought it was pretty good. Everybody did the right thing. Nobody hit each other. Anybody. It was all good.
George got under investigation.
Yes, and I am disappointed he didn't get a full penalty for driving off. Because he didn't just drive off the track because, you know, he got pushed off or went wide. He clearly got off the track and was like, I'm going to boot it. And that shows premeditation. And it shows intent. And, like, it's one thing to get pushed off or go wide and get an advantage. But when you intentionally do it, it's similar to when Alonso, the smart cookie that he is in Russia 2021, was like, hang on a minute, lads. If I go around the outside off the track, maintaining my speed limit and following all the rules and regulations, I can get around this faster than everybody else and I'll get four places. It's so close to that. And I don't like that. I think that's despicable.
I do think Coda turn one is one of the best, is like the best turn one on the calendar.
It is a great corner because there's no way, and I think we talked about this last time, there's like, you can take one of 57 different ways through it. It's ridiculous.
And there's a great 17% grade uphill going right up into it. It is one of the best corners on the entire F1 calendar. And the fact that it's turn one, lap one is just like what most times, like who's on pole does not lead coming out of turn one because it's just dive bomb city. And it's also like you can almost fit the entire grid like wide going up that hill into the first corner. Like it is just... it is awesome, and I love the one. All right, a redeeming thing about the sprint race for Austin is we got to see turn one, lap one twice.
Yes, it's a good corner because it redeems itself for the potential of something going horribly wrong. Right, it has everybody get squashed, but it's wide enough that everybody can give everybody else room.
Speaking of everything going wrong, Oscar Piastri had a great start, and then he and Esteban Ocon bumped, and you know, eventually both retired.
I didn't see the actual causality about what actually happened. I saw that they went into each other, but then it didn't really work. It was very strange.
So I think it was pretty much a racing incident from my point of view. You got into the S's. Oscar had a really good start and was trying to make it places. Ocon was kind of somewhat minding his own business, but also trying to defend. And then they just kind of went kabump. And next thing we know, Ocon's out. And then a couple laps later, Piastri's out. So... kind of sucks for both of them, but yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know. When I was watching that, the bit of the onboard that I saw, it did look a bit like Ocon slid and went a bit wide. But nonetheless, I don't like it when they get taken out so early. I don't mind when they crash into each other on lap 25, but lap 3, I just feel like it makes me sad.
That was lap 1.
Was it lap 1? What happened on lap 3? I thought there was an incident between the two of them on lap 3. But okay, lap 1, whatever.
No, that was lap 1.
Okay, whatever. What else have we got?
We got George. We can talk about George overdriving the car.
Overdriving the car, no penalty.
Going, not respecting the white lines all weekend.
You know, this is. I know I like to rag on George because he's got into my bucket if I don't really like him, and therefore I will continue to rag on him. But I thought it was interesting that he spent the last two races, doing pretty good coming back from the summer break, and we had the whole thing where he was did the interview, and he's like, you know, I've accepted the car for what it is, and it means I can drive it so much better because I'm not trying to make it perfect. You know, I'm just amazing. It's great. And then he just totally spanned it this weekend. He didn't qualify well. He didn't sprint race well. And then he didn't race well. And it's just like, what's going on with you, boy?
I have a theory. I would speculate that last year, Lewis was a bit checked out. We kind of know this from they weren't listening to him about the direction of the car, things like that. I think Lewis was a little bit checked out. This year, they've started listening to Lewis again about the direction of the car, and the car's gotten faster. And we know that when Lewis is checked out, Lewis doesn't race well. And as soon as Lewis is checked in, Lewis races very well. And I think George got the better of Lewis when Lewis was checked out, especially coming off of the 2021 race season with everything that went down at the end of that one. Understandably, Lewis could have been a little checked out. George got the upper hand on him. It was all good. I think this year, Lewis is slowly getting checked back in. He had really good pace today, like really, really good pace today. On top of that, there was he asked Bono on the radio at the very end of the race, where was George? I thought he was like right behind me, essentially. And it's like, no, you just had that much better pace. Like, nope, George just floundered. And I think George is finally coming up against seven-time world champion Lewis Hamilton and realizing how good seven-time world champion Lewis Hamilton is. And is trying his damnedest to show that he is better than Lewis, and he is not better than Lewis. And that is him overdriving the car, not respecting track limits. He is trying to get every ounce of time out of that Merc that Lewis can get, and George just can't.
It's the age-old thing. I think it's the same with Max, and I say it with some of the other great drivers, is that the great drivers can drive really well, and they can be matched. But it's then how much extra they have left in the pocket. And like Valtteri used to talk about this in 2020 and 2021, which is like, you think you've got Lewis. You're like, yeah, I've matched him. And then Lewis just goes deeper. And I think Max hasn't been challenged, but you can see he has that in there. And I think that's where that difference really starts to show is that all things being equal, those drivers perform well. George can perform great against lots of the other drivers, and I think he is doing a pretty reasonable job of driving basically not a great car. But to your point about Lewis getting in the zone, he's had great comments about the car, talking about it was very predictable in this race, which meant he could go push it. And I think that's where you're starting to see those that differences that come out. There's just that extra bit to dig. It's not that the other driver is bad. It's that the great drivers just have that little bit extra to dig.
Yeah, I think when Christian Horner was trying to be an up-and-coming race car driver, I think it was Juan Pablo Montoya he was racing against one time, and he saw him like break for a corner and goes, I can't do that. Like, just, I can't do that. And it's like, okay, maybe I need to find a new job because I can't do that. Yeah, I think that's a little bit of what we're seeing.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if they fix the car for next year, how that pans out. Because everybody's prediction has been that it's just going to be, I think you said it and I haven't disagreed, that it's going to be point for point blows between the two of them. But maybe it isn't.
Maybe. I think it's going to be really interesting to see, like, next year of how much have Red Bull just been building the 2024 car? Like, how much are we just in for another season of this?
Exactly. Exactly. I think that was a big part of what's been going on the last few weeks.
Because it looked close today, but you also think Red Bull probably haven't developed the car since July?
They're looking after the engine. They're looking after the other bits, saving the money for the cost cap, yeah, making sure what money they can spend, that they do spend it on next year's car. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, exactly. No, I'm 100% aligned.
Boy, where did Aston go wrong? Speaking of development and all, like, man, they're back to a point of we go run an old car and a new car, and like Lance looked okay in the new car and Alonso looked really good in the old car. Like, man, it's
really bad. I'm gonna say, is this the Fernando Alonso curse? Right, Fernando has, I think he's one of the greatest drivers of all time. I am fully behind that, but his ability to pick the wrong team at the wrong time is just amazing. And we thought he'd broken the curse with the way Aston Martin was performing at the beginning of the season. I think he duped it with his mid-season switch or mid-season signing last year, and it didn't know what to do, and now it's finally caught up with him. Because it's like going backwards, it's going backwards like a rocket ship. It's ridiculous. It makes no sense.
I actually don't think this is like the curse of Fernando Alonso, because this is like the first time, like, you think back to McLaren in 20 with the GP2 engine issue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was dragging that team on the radio in a very public way, and that did not help any morale, things like this. We've had a very relatively not bridge burning Fernando Alonso. Mm-hmm.
But that's because of what he learned in WEC. I genuinely think that is what he learned in WEC.
Yeah, but I think that feeds a lot more into like the Alonso curse than anything else. I think he was a bad person to work with. I don't think he's necessarily cursed. So I don't know, like, yeah, and it's always been interesting. I think even back to like, you think back to Racing Point days or Force India days, this was a team that always had a very good car at the start of the year and struggled to develop it, and we're still seeing that.
I've always wondered whether this year, I often talk about people who design cars and they build a great car, but they don't understand why. And some of that, I think, is that they intentionally tried. I think some of it is luck. I think this is not even luck, because I feel like a part of being in having a luck when you design a car is you design the car and you were doing great and you thought you were making it great. I don't think that they knew what is going on. I think they are completely and utterly baffled about why it went fast, right? And that's almost worse than not knowing why you go slow. Right? Because you know you've got it wrong and it's going slow, but you don't know that you've got it right and it's going fast, and it's real confusing. And I think that is showing what their real risk is that because they don't know why they went quickly, they are not going to recover next year.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's very clear that they had a great concept and they did not understand the concept.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. Next one, Merck threw away this race for a chance for Lewis to win because their pit stops are crap. They were 1 second on the first pit stop for Lewis, 1 second slower. And if they had gotten that, I didn't see what the second one was. I think it was much better. But if they had gotten that right, it's possible towards the end he would have been in DRS on the penultimate lap and he would have had a chance on Max. Like that 1 second. And it's not like, you know, oh, they screwed up this one time and they got it wrong. Like mistakes happen, life is life. They are consistently 1 second slower than everybody else. And it keeps hurting them when they're on the margins. It's ridiculous. It screwed them in 2021, and it's going to screw them again unless they fix it.
It's very much a, I think, definitely a holdover of we have such a dominant car that we would rather have a 3 or 3.3-second stop and make sure we do nothing wrong and not lose the race in a pit stop with, say, I don't know, a hypothetical 48-hour pit stop at Monaco.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But here's the thing about that gets me, right? That's a fine strategy to have maintained back when everybody else was doing, you know, 3 versus your 3.5.
Right.
We are now in everybody consistently hitting 2.2, 2.0. We had McLaren last time out at Qatar hitting 1.8 seconds to do all four wheels. It is no longer a question of, oh, we don't want to go quick and risk screwing up. When everybody else, when they screw up their pit stop, they're like a 3.8 or 3.9, right? It's...
Max had a terrible pit stop today, and it was 2.8.
Exactly.
And we're sitting there going, this is so slow. Look, the left rear wheel was slow to come off. It was a little sticky. Max sat still for 2.8 seconds, and it was still faster than anything Merck did.
Yeah, they need to fix that. It's ridiculous. I think my weirdest comment is they don't need to hire any more engineers. They don't need to hire any strategists. Okay, maybe they do need to hire any strategists. But they need to hire McLaren or Red Bull's pit trainer. Like, pay that person $1 million a week, whatever it is, and fix that on the team.
I don't even think they need to, like, hire anybody new. I just think they need to drill it. Because it's one of those things, if you think about, thinking back to 2021, where Merck may not have understood the car, and then they finally did really understand the car, and they'd spent, like, a couple races just really trying to dial in the setups, and then they threw a new engine in it, and it was the fastest thing at the end of the season. Like, you think, right? You think back to that, and it's, you can do that for pit stops. Of we're going to dial in and we're going to figure out, and then essentially it'll just go faster and faster and faster. Did you happen to see the comment from one of Red Bull's pit stop crew about the McLaren 180?
I did not.
It was surprisingly, it was a lot more gracious than I thought it was going to be. He was like, great job, McLaren. He was very proud of them. He thought they did a very good job. But he's like, but we want that back, and we are going to try really hard, you know, to go 179. And essentially, but it was essentially like, no, I am not mad at McLaren for taking that world record. It's just like McLaren did a hell of a job to do a 180, but we want it back, and we're gonna train really hard to get that thing back.
And then McLaren will train, and then Ferrari, because Ferrari had some good pit stops this year, maybe at the wrong time on the wrong car with the wrong tires, but they did a great pit stop nonetheless. Like they will keep challenging it, and I think the you know if Merck don't, I mean, I think they should get to that 1.8, but if they can just get to the 2.1, like. They're saving that half a second to a second, which really is mattering when you're on the edges of these wins / losses.
So much of Merck just seems to be it's just so much of a holdover of we have such a dominant car, we can make a couple missteps on strategy, we'd rather not have the worst strategy, we'd rather not have the worst pit stop, and we'll just win it on track. And you had every other team, specifically Red Bull, who was scrapping for a bunch of years, going for every other thing they could find. And now Red Bull has a very dominant car and a really good pit stop and a really good strategy crew. And they are very hard to beat because of it.
Maybe that means what we really need for the next 2 years is the Merck needs to get better, because we want spicy Lewis. We want good, exciting, challenged Lewis. But they need to take that time not just to fix the car. They should be focusing on the 2026 car and fix the rest of their operations, for want of a better word. Because that would be, unlocking that would be, all right, that'd be great. Yes, the great return, the great redemption. We can get some books out of it. We can get a TV series. It'd be great. Fantastic.
All right, we should speed rush some of the last bit of stuff. We've waxed a lot poetic about a lot of this. Danny kind of didn't have the best day. He tried to do the one stop, didn't really make it work. I blame Stroll's wrist guy. I think he's worth 5/10, and that's why Stroll's had a bad season and why Danny's not doing great.
Yeah, I can subscribe to that. I hope he's better, but we'll get to the spicy takes.
Does Ferrari hate Charles Leclerc? He gets it on pole. Yes. They give him the worst strategy. Yes. He tries to do the one stop, lets Carlos through, gets overtaken by Perez. Charles started first and ended up sixth. That's not a good day.
No, that was terrible. But Ferrari gonna Ferrari.
They did, and Sainz still looked really good.
Yeah, he got a great strategy. He was driving the car. He was in a good mood. They communicated effectively. It's great. Sainz is the number one driver at Ferrari. We talked about Perez, so don't need to go over that again. I think we'll go over a summary of the upgrades in terms of whether they worked. Upgrades didn't work on anybody's car. Alfa Romeo brought upgrades, didn't do anything. Haas went nowhere. Aston Martin, which we've discussed at great length, nope, didn't go anywhere. It's ridiculous.
Max had a hell of a good day, went from 6th to 1st. He got his 50th win. He ties the number of points he got last year, which at the time was a record, and we still have 4 races to go.
Yes, 4 more races and a sprint race.
Mexico, Brazil, Vegas, Abu Dhabi.
Yep, and a sprint race in the middle.
Where's the sprint race?
I'm excited about that. Brazil.
Oh, okay. I thought we were done with sprints. Crap.
Oh, one more. One more, I think.
Constructors, McLaren's up to fourth. They're now 90 points behind Ferrari. Oscar's retirement today obviously didn't help them.
How close is Lewis to Perez?
20 points, I think, last time I looked.
Lewis says he doesn't care.
19 points.
Lewis says he doesn't care, but I think he...
19 points in four races? I think he's got it.
Oh, yeah, I think he does. If the performance keeps up, yes.
And if the performance keeps up.
Yeah. Spicy takes?
Sure.
Liam Lawson is the next best driver in the Red Bull stable after Max.
I'm sorry, I thought we said spicy takes.
You don't think that Liam Lawson being the second best driver in the Red Bull stable is a spicy take? Man, that's interesting. That's spicy in and of its own.
I think right now, based on what we've seen on track, it's just true. Like, I really hope Danny can get his mojo back in the last four races of the year, but if he doesn't, it's definitely true.
I think Lawson, if he had a full season in F1, I think he would outperform Yuki. I think he did great out of the stocks. I don't think he outperformed him, but he was pretty close. So, yeah, I'm sad to say I'm not sure Danny has it anymore.
I'm not willing to write Danny off just yet, but maybe.
Next spicy take. It's not really that spicy. I was looking up the timings for the Vegas F1 race. It is ridiculous. It is wrong on so many levels. Qualifying is at midnight on Friday, which is technically Saturday morning. And then the same day, the same Saturday at 10 o'clock, we have the race. This is unacceptable. It's not cricket. It's not cricket.
This is a particularly sore spot, I think, for Dominic and myself, because we are on Pacific time in the U.S., so there are not a lot of races that are at great times for us. A lot of 6 a.m.s, 5 a.m.s, 4 a.m.s, which is fine. Austin's good, started at noon for us today. We have a race in our time zone that starts at 10 p.m. Japan starts at 10 p.m. in our time zone.
It is properly ridiculous, and I don't see how it's good for anybody. Because that race, starting at 10 p.m., starts at 6 a.m. on 7 and 8 a.m. in the EU. That's ridiculous. I don't understand who that helps. Nobody in that part of the world wants a race at 8 a.m. Like, we don't want the race at 8 a.m. here. Thank you very much. It's ridiculous. I am very...
The Australians are very happy about it.
Yes, which maybe is the most underserved part of F1, especially with their driver. F1 has invested this money because they know that Piastri is the future GOAT.
I mean, Australia does have some good ones with, like, the Australian race, Japan's race, Singapore's race, if we ever get a race in China again. So Australia does get, like, some good timings on one, but the fact that the Vegas race is, like, most advantageous for Australian F1 fans is hilarious.
Yeah, it's wrong. Straight into the wrap-up, crazy but plausible prediction for Mexico.
Let's see. We could say the first Mexican driver to win the Mexican Grand Prix.
That's never going to happen.
Okay.
My contrarian take is that Perez absolutely bends it in practice, fails to make Q2, and then gets taken out before the halfway point in the race.
That's interesting. Who's going to struggle with the altitude? Because it's 7,000 feet. You think Merck is going to struggle? I was going to say
McLaren's never done good because the Honda engine in the Red Bull has always been great.
I was going to say McLaren's going to struggle. I don't think they're going to have a good weekend.
That's possible. The only reason that maybe I'd say that McLaren might not be that bad is because of the slightly less dense air. Their giant wing on the back of the car might pay off for them.
Yeah, I'm just thinking along the lines of, like, that. I don't know how much they fully understand what they've built or what compromises they've had to make to get it to work. And you're talking about a car that's worked very well at sea level, now having to deal with a Merck engine at 7,000 feet.
Yeah.
I mean, Mexico City's high. It is high and it is hot.
It is. And I wonder what the weather is. Was it this time last year or was it earlier in the year?
It was about this time last year.
Okay. So, yeah. And it is always a Red Bull track.
Yeah, because Red Bull doesn't care about cooling, so it's fine.
Yeah, because they built that amazing Honda engine.
Danny Ricking the points?
No.
I'm just going to keep saying it until it happens.
I know. I to be serious about Danny Ricking points, I think if he's going to do it, it's going to be probably in Las Vegas.
I could see Vegas. I could see Interlagos as well, because that's a real driver's track.
That was going to be my second choice. I think it's... If we believe that Danny has his mojo, he just needs time to get back into it. And he hasn't had that opportunity. And that's why I say Vegas, because I feel like Vegas is... Everything's up for a play, because I think it's a weird track. Nobody's driven on it yet. And it's just an opportunity for him to be in the moment. He's finally got the momentum back again. And I think that's where if he's got his mojo, that's where I think it will show it. And for me, it's he has to outperform Yuki as well as getting the points.
Which car do Aston Martin bring to Mexico?
Both of them. And try, because they've got free practice 1, 2, and 3.
Do you think they're going to run both cars again? Both specs?
I think that's what they need to do. They need to do that. To answer the questions that they don't have. And they need more control conditions.
I'm wondering if they even need to bring back, like, the first spec of the year. Because
I think they need to do that. I think that's one of the things. This comes back to your point about testing. I think they should be allowed. I think all the teams should be allowed to go back and try a couple of things like that. I think it's important. Maybe that's what they need, is the bonus race at the very end. Everybody takes the cars back in the original spec from Bahrain and runs those, and we get to see what really happens.
Hmm. Well, once again, thank you for listening to Tinfoil Helmets. We are, as always, awaiting your feedback. Feel free to write us at feedback@tinfoilhelmets.com and let us know your conspiracy theories, feedbacks, and wants. Also, tell your friends to listen, like, rate, and subscribe. And you should also like, rate, listen, and subscribe. If you want to follow us on social media, we are at Tinfoil Helmets on Instagram and Threads. Until next time, which would be the Mexican Grand Prix, this same bat time, same bat channel. And Tinfoil Helmets. Go to yournamehere.com/tinfoilhelmets for a new subscriber offer.